And so finally, there will be comeuppance, just as there was for South Africa when there were massive investigations afterwards. And all of these crimes that we're seeing now will actually get some proper scrutiny and some proper investigation. Because right now, we're still miles off. Israel gets a green light. In fact, worse than that, Israel gets £38 billion of over 10 years of aid from America, including mostly weapons grants. Britain is still dealing with Elbit Systems, which is the largest Israeli weapons company, developing their weapons by bombing Palestinians in Gaza and, you know, announcing it and selling those weapons as such. Fortunately, the world is changing. Fortunately, Palestinians still resist on the ground. In England, we have so many actions against the weapons factories now that have shut them down, including the one near here in Oldham. We've had HSBC divest from Elbit Systems because of the cluster bombs. We're going to have, I think, Puma soon will stop sponsoring the Israeli Football Association. And we've had loads of universities divest, like Manchester University from Caterpillar and other companies that are complicit. So there is ongoing changes internationally, and it will happen. And the people will hold Israel to account where governments and legal systems haven't. But eventually, just like South Africa, when the people acted like they are doing now in this growth, eventually the legal scrutiny will grow, and so will governments and institutions internationally, and that will hold Israel to account. It is a process. It is only going one way. Israel is out of control. They're not even caring anymore about what the world sees anymore. And finally, I think we will see freedom for Palestine in my lifetime, which is something I never thought I'd see. And eventually, apartheid, just like South Africa, will no longer be allowed to happen. And people all over that area will have the same rights as each other, which is hardly utopia. It's something that everybody should be expecting.
I was going to ask you about what you said, Zafar Bangash, and I think it's the right time, about the ex-premier Ehud Barak, who said Israel could cease to exist before the 80th anniversary, and what he said, that Jews have not ruled for more than 80 years on the trough throughout history, predicting a doom and gloom scenario once he said that, where he said the 80-year-old, where he said the present Israeli regime represents the third experience and is approaching the eighth decade of the entity's existence. Do you agree with him? If you could say that in 30 seconds.
I think all of the indications are, both internally as well as externally, that the Zionist ideology is heading for destruction. And this is because of their own arrogance, because the Palestinian people, in their absolute magnanimity, they have not said that they don't want to live with the Jewish people. In fact, they have not persecuted the Jewish people in their entire history. Whenever the Jewish people were persecuted elsewhere, they sought refuge either in Palestine or any other Muslim countries. And Muslims are proud of that fact and that history.
Okay.
But when you have this Zionist occupiers with this Zionist ideology of racism, of ethnic cleansing, coming into Palestine, and they want everything for themselves, then I think they are digging their own grave.
Very
and
well.
I believe that they are
Thank
heading
for that. Sorry, we're fresh out of time. Zafar Bangash there, Director of the Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought. And it was great seeing you again. A.D. Mormick from Manchester. Hopefully tomorrow we can connect with you if you're going on the protest that you said you are for Nakba Day. Human rights activist and member of the Manchester Palestine Action. Thank you. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikael Batakway and the team, it's goodbye until next time.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sador Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Brother Habib and Sayyid Mohsen. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Brother Habib Zata, assalamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So for today's discussion, we want to talk about an interesting topic. Pets, is it ethical to keep them according to the religion of Islam? Sayyid Mohsen, let's start with you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. When we talk about the pets, yes, there are some animals who are allowed, or, you know, Islam talks about them to keep them as a pet, for example. Cow, goat. You know, sometimes they have said in some of the narrations, obviously, when we look at the Islamic perspective, either we look at the Quran or the narrations, we see that there are certain pets which were, you know, animals which were at the home as a pet. And but the main thing is, you know, when you want to have an animal, mm-hmm. you must look after the rights of the animals as well. For okay. example, in the chapter An'am, verse number 38, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَمَا مِنْ دَابَّةٍ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَلَا طَائِرٍ يُطِيرُ بِجَنَاحَيْهِ إِلَّا أُمَمٌ أَمْثَالَكُمْ. You know, we have the animals and the birds that fly, you know, with the wings. They are not except something like you. They are the communities like you.
Okay.
You know, مَا فَرَّطْنَا فِي الْكِتَابِ مِنْ شَيْءٍ. And we have not neglected anything in the book. ثُمَّ إِلَىٰ رَبِّهِمْ يُحْشَرُونَ. And after that, they all will be gathered towards their Lord. So this verse also tells us that there are the rights of the animals, as we need to look after the rights of the, you know, being a human being of each other. We need to okay. look after their rights as well. And
Islam respects the rights
yes,
of the animals, okay?
Islam respects the rights of every single, you know,
creature.
Thing that exists.
Okay, yes.
You know, plants, even, you know, it is said in some of the narrations that cutting off a tree is just like killing mm-hmm. a person.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have these kinds of narrations yes. as well. So Islam pays attention to every single, you know, thing that exists, because
okay.
these all are the creatures of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allah has created all of them.
Yes.
And they all have, you know, their own status. And they are for each other. But mm-hmm. on top of that, because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made human beings as ashraful
yes.
makhluqat, the superior
yes.
of all
okay.
of the others, so these all are made for the mankind so that they can reach to perfection.
Okay. But not living with them, Habib, isn't it?
A'udhu billahi minash shaitan ar-rajim, bismillahir rahmanir rahim. First of all, just to add off, and
okay.
then we'll come
yes,
to your
yes,
answer.
Yes.
We have, for example, prohibited animals to keep as pets.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is dogs.
Yes.
There's a saying that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alayhi, told Gabriel the angel, why aren't you coming inside the house? He says, I think that there's a dog in the house.
Oh.
So he goes to the inside the room of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He sees that there's a puppy in the house.
Mm.
So he takes the puppy out.
Okay.
And
also pigs, for example.
Pigs, because they're dirty, yes,
yes.
And whatnot. But there's no prohibition, you know,
okay.
keeping one. But you cannot own one.
Yes.
There's a difference between
yes.
the two, right? And there are different narrations that state, for example, that the Imam alayhi salam had chicken.
Mm-hmm.
They had kinds of pigeons. الرواعب, and they curse the killers of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And for example, that keep a hen in your house because it wakes you up for Fajr prayers, for example. Yes. Keep your chicken in the house because it keeps away devils and demons from your children, for example. And the Imam alayhi salam had pigeons. I'm 100% about that. Okay. There's a saying that Imam Baqir alayhi salam had them. Yes. He gifted them to some of his companions and whatnot. Yes. Cows and cattle and stuff like that. Normal for Arabs at the time to have, you know, okay, as pets and, you know, to use and take. We even have this saying that a man, a companion of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, had a lamb. He raised it until it became big.
Yes.
And then he sacrificed it and ate its meat.
Mm-hmm.
He went to the Imam. He said that before I sacrificed it, it looked me in the eyes and I looked it in the eyes.
Oh.
And I felt some kind of mercy, but yet I still continued to do my work. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam told him, I wish that you wouldn't have slaughtered it.
Oh.
And of course, horses, donkeys, yes, and stuff like that were also available.
The goats and the sheep.
Yeah. Yes. And of course, we see a lot of emphasis on how to act with horses,
mm-hmm,
and camels. Because
yes,
they usually, these were the mainstream pets. They were usually used the most.
Yes.
And the Imam alayhi salam, the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, do not hit your animal. Treat it well. Give it water. Yes. Do not put heavy things on it.
Or cutting out the tails. Yes.
Exactly.
They did not do that.
And for example, he saw a camel that had a lot of stuff on it,
yes,
and its owner was not available. And
yes,
it was tied.
Yes.
The Prophet said, "Where is this person? This, mm-hmm, person is going to have problems with me on the day of judgment."
Wow.
So that's something to keep in mind how they used to deal with the animals. Now, something that I want to keep the dear listeners up about is that, for example, keeping pets like snakes and spiders. Because I've seen some people, yes, I've seen python snakes, for example. Okay. I've touched one. I've seen my friends had some, right? I even have some friends who had cobras as pets, okay, right? But at the end of the day, these are dangerous animals to be around.
Mm-hmm.
So the prohibition could be from the dangers that they might bring.
Okay.
So that's something to keep in mind.
So what about living with the animal? Does it have any effect on your lifestyle as a Muslim?
As a Muslim, there's this recommendation. There's this, you know, prohibition of praying in the marabat al-khayl or marabat al-ibil, praying where the camels drink water and where the horses drink water, for example. Yes. There's also this. I've seen it before. I'm not sure where. This recommendation of sleeping where the sheep sleep, so sleeping next to the sheep, that's
okay,
something.
Okay.
Other than that, you know, it's a lifestyle at the end of the day. It doesn't affect you as a Muslim, you know, and as a religion, as your life. Because,
okay,
you know, because I've been to, you know, a slaughterhouse. I've been with sheep. I've touched, yes, sheep. I have videos with sheep as well and pictures as well if you want to,
okay,
see them, brother, I thought,
okay,
after the show. But the thing is that, you
but,
know,
but
the
you
smell,
do not live with them, brother. Because nowadays, you know, when we're talking about the pets, it's a member of the family.
There's
nowadays,
this, you know, bond,
no
relationship,
yeah, yeah,
relationship,
no,
that becomes with it.
Yeah.
I have this story about my grandfather with a dog that he brought. And he had this good connection with it and everything. He bought it from Beirut and he went to, you know, they live in the south, way in the south.
Okay.
My grandparents' village is considered as part of, you know, occupied Palestine right now.
Okay.
So it's like in Google Maps at least.
Okay.
So my grandmother hit him with a rock. He ran away.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of months later, my grandfather goes down to the, you know, same street he buys the dog from, and then he sees the dog over there with the owner.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how close and how loyal he was to his first owner.
Okay.
So there's that loyalty, there's that love that happens between, you know, the, especially with dogs. Cats are, you know, no, I hate cats.
Okay. But I still believe that the modern lifestyle, Sayyid, considers pets as a member of the family. And this is the problem that I think the religion of Islam has with it, isn't it? Because of the influences of the behaviors of the dogs or cats or any animal on you. And unfortunately, replacing the pets with the child, you know, nowadays we could see so many families getting married, even getting married in the modern world, you know, do not have children, but consider the pet as a child.
So these are the realities, you know. Okay. We see these kind of discussions on the, you know, on the social
how
media.
How belittles human being.
But the point is that, you know, okay, the main point is that, you know, when you give love to the animals, they will also love you.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, we need to love our kids. We need to love our family.
Okay.
So the main point is obviously when we do not know why we were, for example, you know, were created.
Yes.
We do not know about our existence, mm-hmm, the goal of existence.
Yes.
Then obviously, whatever is in this material world will go after it. And the reason why the people are, you know, changing like or exchanging their children, like not having children but having a pets, you know, in a time of their life, they do realize,
mm-hmm, that what a big mistake they have done. And the pets, obviously, they can have this love with any kind of pet, you know. Mm-hmm. If they have a pigeon, they have a dog, they have a cat, I don't know, ducks, you know, they can love them.
Usually, the modern world, it's very much impossible to have, especially with the modern lifestyle and the systems, you know, the houses, the type of the houses, these apartments that the people have, you know, for example, to keep an animal in the yard or something like that. Unless you got a big house with a big yard or a garden or something.
These are our own issues, our problems, the human beings.
Yes.
You know, because we have moved to a lifestyle where we do not have enough room. Even, you know, in Islam, when we look at the Islamic perspective about the house, it says you should have enough rooms. Mm-hmm. There should be a separate room for the kids. There should be a place in the house or a room in a house for kids to play. Mm-hmm. A yard where you can, you know, go out and have, you know, the sun and the fresh air. So the Islamic lifestyle is different from the Western lifestyle, what we see. So if we have the true Islamic lifestyle, if we follow the Islamic lifestyle, then obviously we need to look after all these things, the issues that are being said in the Islam. And as regards to the pets, yes, it is unfortunately is happening. But obviously, the pets can never be your kids. You know, the pets. Yes. For example, a husband and wife who do not have a kid. Tomorrow when they die, who's going to inherit those pets? What are they going to do with the land or the house? Or they need another person to take care of them.
Okay.
They're not just like humans. So this is a wrong concept. This is a wrong concept which has been, you know, injected into the minds of the people. And that's why we see that, fortunately, the Hollywood or, you know, the Disneyland or the cartoons have criticized this thing. You know,
animations
like Boss Baby and all those, how the puppy is going to be. So fortunately, we see that even in this point, those who have the material thoughts, who are non-Muslims and they do not pay any attention to Islam, they are also with us because they also realize this mass which is going to be, happen. So basically what is happening is it is against the fitrah, it is against the nature of the human beings to replace the kids or human being with something which is, you know, in your control or you're just feeding it. On the other hand, Islam allows it. Why? Because there are many benefits.
I think, you know, respecting the rights of the animals in your idea is very much different from keeping them as the pets inside your house. These are two separate things, isn't it?
These are two separate things.
Separate things, that's right.
Yes.
Okay.
Because
respect the rights of the animals, but it's not necessarily
to keep them as food pets. On time. Obviously, this is a kind of sadaqah for you.
If you have.
For example, in the narrations, brother has also mentioned, in the narrations we have from the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, that whoever has a cock which is white color and with the big, you know, wings.
Feathers, yes.
It is beneficial for your, you know, seven neighbors as well.
Mm-hmm.
It, wipes away the bala. So these are in the narrations. As far as it is concerned to the dogs, it is said if it is something like if you have the dog for guarding your house.
Security.
That is fine. Okay. But do not bring it inside the house.
Yes.
So Islam gives importance to the animals, to their rights. But on top of that, being a Muslim, we should know the rulings about the keeping the animals first.
Mm-hmm. Also paying for them, for them, and
after that, have a pet in your house. Mm-hmm. This is very important because, you know, we just bring a pet in the house, for example, a puppy or a cat, I don't know,
a bird
or anything, but we never have, you know, learned about the rights of that, animal. Okay. So this is important that even if you want to have a puppy in your house, know about the rulings. There is a najasa, there is a purification.
Usually the pets are kept as a hobby, isn't it? And is this hobby making with the animals allowed in Islam? I mean, you being busy with an animal inside the house, normally you have to manage.
Hobby, I know, me personally, if I had a bigger house, which inshallah ta'ala, Allah yirzuqna, may Allah bless us, all of us, inshallah ta'ala, you know, not an apartment house,
but a big yard.
A big yard.
Yes.
I would personally bring in pigeons and chicken. And the reason
this is good, not
because of the hobby, because of the recommendation available that keeps away the devils.
Okay.
Right? That's one thing.
Okay.
Another thing that some people bring it, not for their own sake, for their kids' sake.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, my Sayyid Mohsen.
Welcome.
Brother Habib, for your presence in the program. Viewpoints, that's all we have time for today's discussion. Okay. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program, Viewpoints on IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam Page. For more information, visit our website, at parstoday.com/Call of Islam page, also YouTube, Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you. Fi aman Allah.
The same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you to doubt you would be the worst to stay? Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest night, shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
NATO critics say the alliance's expansion is what led to the war in Ukraine, and now moves are afoot to provoke Moscow even further. It looks almost certain that Finland, and most probably Sweden, are to join NATO. Via video link, senior Helsinki officials set out their case to the European Parliament on Thursday as to why Finland would fit right in.
Finland has many high-end capabilities, including a fighter jet fleet of F-80s, gradually to be replaced by recently ordered 64 F-35 jet fighters.
Sweden's Malin Björk asked what's the rush given that her country and Finland have said they don't feel under immediate threat. However, it seems most EU lawmakers are supportive.
We think that it is not only defining for Finnish security, but it's only an important step in European history.
Finland's border with Russia stretches for 1,300 kilometres. Membership would mean NATO's land border with the Federation would more than double. The Kremlin has warned there will be military retaliation if the plan goes ahead. Experts aren't ruling out the possibility of World War III.
This creates a major problem because when you change the architecture of security, of course, you create waves of reaction and perceived threats, which is the case for Russia now.
The US and its European allies are spending enormous amounts of money on arming Ukraine. One EU lawmaker criticized this during Thursday's proceedings.
We have a very powerful arms industry in the European Union, and many nations rely on arms exports. We should be doing all we can to prevent conflicts escalating instead.
Analysts say it could take up to a year for Finland to fully join NATO, but in the meantime, it will become a de facto member. The question is, in the event of escalation, will it be viewed as protected or as a target? Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Young people are those who most seriously bore the brunt for the COVID crisis in the European Union. A preliminary study carried out by European Cooperation Programme Specialised in Regional Analysis, or ESPON, has found youth unemployment across the EU went up by almost 22% with respect to pre-pandemic levels, with jobs going wasted in sectors affected the most by anti-COVID restrictions, such as hotels, restaurants and retail business.
Things have changed for the worse during the pandemic, definitely. I work as a kitchen hand and I've only been offered casual employment over the past months.
The COVID health crisis has been an eye-opener for many young workers.
suddenly we found ourselves thrown into making a choice between badly paid casual work and spending time at home doing nothing.
Food supply chain and tourism account together for about 35% of Italy's GDP. During the COVID crisis, hundreds of thousands of small and medium firms were forced to shut down, and a large number of young workers, the vast majority of whom under casual underpaid contracts, were left stranded. The Italian youth unemployment rate has traditionally stood at worrying levels. For almost two decades, youth joblessness in Italy has been more than the double of the total EU average, reaching a whopping 45% in 2015.
Today, young people bear the brunt for 20 years of political choices which have included austerity policies, hence jobs cuts and funding cuts to education services, and labour policies which have deregulated the labour market, introducing tens of casual working contracts which have left the youth unprotected and unwilling to consider job opportunities in Italy.
The ESPON study has also found that over 60% of people aged 18 to 34 were at risk of depression in the EU in 2021, with the deterioration in mental health being particularly evident among those who had lost their occupation. Max Civili, Rome.
The Embassy of Palestine in the Russian Federation organized a ceremony to pay tribute for veteran Al Jazeera journalist Shirin Abu Akleh, who was killed by Israeli forces in Jenin on Wednesday. Her colleagues, fellow journalists and people gathered near the embassy to condemn the Israeli regime for what they called the heinous crime.
Shirin's a person I knew well. She was murdered in cold blood. This is a great loss, not only for Al Jazeera, but for the entire journalistic community. Shirin was very professional, famous, and her name was associated primarily with Palestine. She's long been a symbol for the Palestinian people who are seeking freedom and justice.
Abu Akleh's killing follows a long string of Israeli attacks on Palestinian journalists. According to the database of the Committee to Protect Journalists, 24 journalists have been killed in Israel and the Palestinian territories since 1992. While 14 people were caught in the crossfire, others appear to have been deliberate victims.
At least she made with me at least 5-6 interviews. Usually we saw her everywhere, the checkpoints, Jerusalem, in Gaza, in Jenin, in West Bank, everywhere. Where we need her, we find her, exactly. She's a very active journalist. And we are, as Palestinians, we never make a differentiation between Muslim and the Christian, never.
Journalists who were with Abu Akleh, including one who was shot and wounded, said Israeli forces fired upon them even though they were clearly identifiable as reporters.
The assassination of journalist Shirin Abu Akleh is another crime to be added to the criminal record of the Israeli regime, which for decades has been trying to silence the voice of truth and obliterate the Palestinian cause. Marina Kartonova, Moscow.
Sandwiched between the towering Alborz mountain range and the Caspian Sea, Iran's city of Sari has been a hot tourist target for its spectacular natural sceneries. This has won the city the title of the tourism capital of the ecoregion in 2022. The city has invited the country's officials and foreign ambassadors to celebrate the designation of the title.
There are several criteria. For example, it's of course the historical sites, the beautiful nature, and necessary existing necessary infrastructure for tourism. So all these criteria in general can contribute for the selecting and announcing the particular city or particular place in eco region as a eco capital.
Iran is among the top 10 countries in the world when it comes to tourism. We have a wide range of capacities from ecotourism to historical tourism and especially marine tourism. Our country has a 5,400-kilometer long coastline, which potentially makes it a hot destination for sea tourism. Now it's time to use our resources and strengthen the infrastructure such as accommodation to boost our tourism industry.
The Economic Cooperation Organization, or shortly ECO, is an Asian political and economic intergovernmental entity with 10 member states, including Iran, Turkey, and Pakistan. Sanri was selected as the tourism capital of ECO during the third ECO ministerial meeting on tourism, held in October 2019 in Tajikistan. The Tajik capital, Dushanbe, was earlier named the tourism capital of ECO for the year 2021. And Iran's northwestern city of Ardabil will succeed Sari as the 2023 capital of the ECO region. Officials say the initiative opens up new opportunities for investment in the designated city, which will help boost the tourism infrastructure.
I can say that many countries in ECO region are taking steps towards the facilitation of the issuing visas for the citizens of ECO member states. And so, of course, the facilitation or removing the visas, it's is important factor in increasing the number of touristic arrivals. Could contribute in the development of touristic sector in ECO region.
From the Caspian Hyrcanian mixed forests to marshlands, wildlife refuge, and an amazing beach, the mesmerizing and diverse nature of Sari indeed deserves to be titled the tourism capital of ECO. The organization says it will continue the initiative and will name new cities as tourism capitals each year to boost cooperation between tourism entities of the member states. With its eye-catching landscapes and mesmerizing nature, Sari has already been a tourist magnet for mainly Iranian travelers. And now with its designation as the tourism capital of the ECO region, the city should expect a larger number of foreign tourists to visit the city and enjoy its attractions. Yusuf Jalali, Sari.
On Wednesday morning, Palestinians woke up to the tragic news of the brutal killing of Al Jazeera journalist Shireen Abu Akleh in the Jenin refugee camp. Abu Akleh was killed after being shot in the head while covering Israeli army raids in the northern occupied West Bank. Her killing drew angry reactions and condemnations in Palestine and around the world. Palestinian resistance groups, including Hamas and the Islamic Jihad, condemned in the strongest terms Israel's killing of the Palestinian journalist.
The Zionist enemy killed Shireen in cold blood in another example of their brutality against Palestinians. Killing her exposes the violent and criminal nature of the Zionist regime. We condemn this brutal crime and we demand that the Zionist regime and its leaders be brought to justice for their crimes.
Shireen Abu Akleh's extrajudicial killing is further evidence of a trend by Israeli regime forces to systematically attack journalists. During the 11-day war in 2021, Israeli warplanes bombed several buildings in Gaza, housing media companies and news channels.
The Zionist regime attacks journalists in order to silence them and to hide the truth. By targeting Palestinian journalists, the Zionist regime wants to terrorize us and stop us from exposing its war crimes to the world. The Zionist regime doesn't want us to show its ugly face.
Statistics show that Israeli regime forces have killed some 50 Palestinian journalists during the last 22 years. During the Great March of Return, Israeli snipers shot and killed two Gazan journalists and injured dozens more.
This is not the first time Israeli armed forces has targeted Palestinian journalists. They have targeted a number of them during the Great March of Return in 2018. And this is also another addition to Israeli illegal practices against Palestinian journalists by killing Shireen Abu Akleh, one of the most famous journalists in the Palestinian territories. Israel is trying to kill the truth.
Experts say Israeli forces will continue with their violations against journalists as long as the international community keeps turning a blind eye. Israeli forces have been increasingly attacking journalists in recent years. Palestinian journalists risk their lives on a daily basis to cover the news and expose the brutality of the Israeli regime. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
With every candle symbolizing the path she lit, activists and journalists gathered in front of the Embassy of Palestine in Tehran, not just to condemn her killing by an Israeli sniper, but to show the world that Shireen Abu Akleh's footsteps will be followed. Al Jazeera's 51-year-old journalist was targeted on assignment while wearing a press jacket that made it easy for her to be identified as a journalist.
The policies of our Zionist enemies has always been clear. They are against anyone who unveils the reality on the ground. The killing of a well-known journalist like Shirin shows that they obviously don't want the world to know the truth about Palestine.
We lost a dear colleague who was killed on assignment. This is a sad day for journalists all over the world. What makes it even more tragic is that she was not even in a war zone. This proves that freedom of speech and human rights means nothing to the Zionist regime.
The Palestinian journalist was also a citizen of the United States, and many are now asking why the U.S. is silent about what they can only describe as blatant murder. Shirin was a veteran journalist and very well known, too. Obviously, the Israeli regime does not want the world to know about its crimes, and that's why they silenced her.
Well, this shows the cruelty of the Israeli regime. As you can see, if we see such an act in other countries, we may face with a strong reaction by the Western governments and also Western media. But today, inside occupied Palestine, we have seen one of the most cruel scenes that could be possible. An Israeli soldier attacked a journalist and killed him in front of the camera. And this shows that, unfortunately, by the double standards of the Western governments and also Western medias, Israeli governments can continue to kill and assassinate everyone. And this is completely against the freedom of speech and the freedom of the Palestinian people.
Shirin Abu Akleh was covering the Israeli forces' raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank on Wednesday. The veteran television correspondent was a household name across the Arab world for her bold coverage of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
The tragic event has sparked outrage in Iran as well as other parts of the world. Those who have gathered in front of the Palestinian embassy in Tehran are calling for impunity for Israel to end. Gisumisha Ahmadi, Tehran.
Following the killing of Palestinian journalist Shirin Abu Akleh, Yemeni journalists have gathered in front of the Palestinian embassy in Sana'a to denounce Israeli crimes against Palestinian journalists and media activists.
The Yemeni Journalists Union condemns what has happened to Shirin Abu Akleh and her colleague. They were directly targeted by Israeli forces while wearing a press vest to ensure protection in the areas of conflict based on international conventions. Her killing is a flagrant violation of international law. We call on all media activists around the world to express solidarity with Abu Akleh and other colleagues in Palestine.
The Yemeni media activists denounced in the strongest terms the targeted killing of Abu Akleh by Israeli forces as she was covering an Israeli raid in the occupied West Bank.
The news of the martyrdom of Shirin was shocking. And the whole world is shocked because she was a powerful and influential figure and was able to represent a strong voice. The killing of Shirin is a turning point and the beginning of a new phase, and her blood will have a significant impact, God willing, in pushing the free people to move against the Zionist project.
Abu Akleh was a veteran Palestinian journalist for the Qatar-based Al Jazeera television news network. She was hit by a live bullet while covering an Israeli raid in the city of Jenin while wearing a press vest.
Yemeni journalists say Shirin Abu Akleh will always remain a symbol of courage for all the free journalists around the world who stand against oppression, whatever it takes. They say Abu Akleh's killing is a blatant violation of international law on the protection of journalists. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Some say the recent election changes everything, others say it doesn't. But it has changed a century of unionist political dominance.
The state was founded on the basis of a gerrymandered sectarian headcount, where it was believed there would be a permanent and perpetual unionist majority. Nationalists and Republicans were never intended or expected to get the top political job here.
The election has complicated Northern Ireland's existing problems. Sinn Féin nationalists' victory a step towards a future united Ireland, a blow to the unionists, with the Democratic Unionists Party threatening to boycott the Stormont Assembly over a post-Brexit sea border for trade that they say undermines Northern Ireland's position in the United Kingdom.
Among the things that remain to be changed, this reminder of the decades-old sectarian divide, a wall separating communities as it has done through decades of troubles and peace. We tried to speak to people on the unionist side of it to no avail. But real change seems happening in the center. The Alliance Party has doubled its vote share among those who want to increase awareness. Cross-community efforts like those here may speak of a younger generation's desire to understand each other, regardless of which side they're on. And this is not the only center forging such ties, and they're all moving in the same direction.
So the purpose of this is trying to normalize interactions between both communities, to show young people that the culture and identity of those people based on the other side of the wall is no threat to their own culture and identity. And then a copper fastens their sense of culture, identity and space that makes it harder to feel threatened by others.
But while those threats remain, it is clear that there is a middle ground growing, thanks to these nascent cross-community ties. Saeed Puriza, Belfast, Northern Ireland.
Many believe the crime of sexually abusing a child is even more heinous than murder. The EU's executive arm, the European Commission, says 85 million child sex abuse videos and images were identified by the bloc's authorities last year, a record number.
In the EU, the reports related to the European Union, the member states, have increased with 6,000% the last 10 years. Why is this increasing? Of course, nobody knows for sure.
The Commission says it's not known exactly why these crimes are on the rise, but analysts say the EU has been allowed to expand too quickly, with some nations harbouring criminal gangs.
And now, of course, thanks to or due to open borders, are these criminal networks, they started to flourish and integrate further.
The EU Commission is proposing to establish a new agency designed to prevent child sex abuse and support victims.
At least one in five children falls victim to sexual violence during childhood in Europe. So these numbers are really embarrassing.
Anti-trafficking agencies say 2 million children recently entered the EU having fled the conflict in Ukraine, many of them unaccompanied. Gangs and individuals see an opportunity for exploitation.
The police and child protection services need to work together, plus they need to work together across borders, and there need to be better information sharing platforms.
The European Commission has a message for predators.
We are coming for you.
But critics are asking why more has not been done up to now. Given that it promotes itself as a project designed to protect and improve the lives of citizens, rights groups say this issue seriously undermines the credibility of the European Union. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Indeed, most Western media outlets draw from a standard playbook, rather than digging deeper to find the truth and to challenge the Israeli regime statements. Reporters instead help the regime to shroud events in ambiguity. This double standard exposes the complicity of Western media in covering up Israeli crimes, says Abir Kopti, blogger and activist, in an article titled "Shirin Abu Aghla Killing: How Western Media Parrots Israeli Regime Propaganda." Stay tuned for more. All of Palestine has united in shock to mourn the killing of iconic Al Jazeera journalist Shirin Abu Aghla by the Zionist regime. But amid their grief, they are forced to witness how Western media outlets yet again are failing them. When a Palestinian is killed by the Zionist regime forces, the act is always described in passive terms. Abir Kopti, blogger and activist, says, "We just die on our own. No one kills us. Sometimes we die as collateral damage in clashes, with no context given as to how the altercation broke out or the power imbalance at play." Then comes the automatic adoption of the Israeli regime talking points, which are always manipulative. The Zionist regime's strategy is to immediately deny responsibility, then to cast doubt on Palestinian testimonies, laying the groundwork for the assertion that there are two versions of the story. The media then repeats this uncritically. On the day Abu Aghla was executed, the reporter of BBC World Service parroted the Zionist regime talking point that she was killed by Palestinian gunfire, then noted that Palestinians had said she was killed by the Zionist regime fire. Most international media adopted the same lines, almost as though they had written their pieces collaboratively on a joint Google Doc, while being sure to air all of the Zionist regime's talking points. However, Western media failed to give the same consideration to the Palestinian side. Palestinians have every reason to distrust the fabricated regime of Israel, which habitually uses such investigations to bury cases. But Western media do not appear to care about this vital context. The skewed coverage continued even during Abu Aghla's funeral. After the Zionist regime forces attacked Palestinian mourners with live footage showing a deliberate and unprovoked assault, major news outlets disingenuously wrote about clashes erupting or violence breaking out. Indeed, most Western media outlets draw from a standard playbook. Rather than digging deeper to find the truth and to challenge the Zionist regime statements, reporters instead help the fabricated regime of Israel to shroud events in ambiguity. And no matter what comes next, even if the next story includes a line about the Palestinian response, the first impression has already been set. In Abu Aqila's case, little effort was needed to debunk the Zionist version of events. She was accompanied by several other journalists whose testimony aligned. They all said the same thing. Abu Aqila was targeted by an Israeli sniper. Unfortunately, it would seem that the words of Palestinian journalists are not sufficiently credible for Western media. Testimony from journalists such as Shata Hanaisha, who was next to Abu Aqila when she was killed, Ali Asamudi, who was also shot and wounded in the incident, and Mujahid Asadi, who also witnessed the killing, are not accepted without further validation from Israeli rights groups such as B'Tselem or news sources such as Haaretz. Even then, when the Western media can no longer avoid exposing the Zionist regime's lies, they may add a few lines to their stories here and there. But when the integrity of these stories is truly crucial, in the hours immediately following these types of events, reporters habitually stick to Zionist propaganda. This, in turn, sticks in the minds of the readers and viewers. When journalists are killed in other parts of the world, reports from Western media immediately cite the killing. This double standard exposes the complicity of Western media in covering up the Zionist regime's crimes. Ending this complicity would not require much. Just for international media to treat Palestinians, including journalists, with the respect they have earned.
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
الله يا الله سبحان الله الله يا الله والحمد لله الله ولا إله
Islam has laid the foundation of man's life from before his birth. It has established the social foundations of the family and has laid down injunctions for man for the time that he lives in the family, for the time that he enters into education, to the time that he enters society, to the time that he has relations with other countries, with other governments, with other nations. All of these have a program. The holy laws contain provisions for all of these things. Islam does not constitute just praying and making pilgrimage.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to the program Spring of Truth from IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Sayyid Mohsin Naqvi, with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini in regards to the Islam and our deeds. In one of his speeches, Imam Khomeini mentions that today the most estranged thing in the world is Islam, and its salvation requires sacrifices. Pray that I will be one of those who are to be sacrificed. Now, we know that, obviously, Islam is a complete religion, and the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and after him, the infallible imams and his companions, and throughout the history, there were many people who saved Islam, who brought Islam, and who sacrificed themselves for the Islam. Especially, we can see the role of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, where he sacrificed everything that he had for the sake of Islam, for the salvation of the Islam. Because even at that time, Islam was about to be finished by the enemies, but obviously it was Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his struggle and his sacrifices that saved Islam. And therefore, Imam Hussein became a role model for everyone who is following the Islamic teachings, who wants to follow the Islamic teachings, not only the Islam, but also for the humanity. Islam is not just talking about praying God. It talks about humanity. It talks about justice. It talks about the family system. It talks about the true social system, which should be applied and which is required. Therefore, Imam Khomeini is asking people in one of his speeches that pray that I also sacrifice myself, or I'm be sacrificed in this path, means I get martyr. Obviously, the sacrifice can have different meanings. Once someone wishes to be martyred in the path of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the way Imam Hussein was martyred, so therefore, it is a good thing to wish. It is a good thing to pray for. And this sacrifice means that a person is sacrificing his family life, he is sacrificing his personal desires in order to have Islam, in order to save Islam, in order to spread Islam in the society. And this is our duty, being a Muslim in today's world, that where we have Islamophobia, we must struggle to spread Islam, but the true Muhammadan Islam, not the Islam which has been propagated by the West or by these so-called powers who are bringing the fake picture of the Islam like ISIS and other groups. But rather, we need to show the true face of Islam, the Islam of peace, the Islam of completion, the Islam of perfection, the Islam that brings justice in the society, inshallah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.